It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey.
Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey.
Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back. Week 12 of the NFL. The Bills, one of six teams without a game to play. And so it is mass exodus, probably. The airports are jammed. Week before Thanksgiving, that's probably good. Rather than having your bye on the week of Thanksgiving. There could be pluses and minuses there. When everybody's in the airport. You know?
Are there buys next week with games on Thanksgiving?
I think there are two.
Okay.
There are six more, I think, in week 14.
Wow.
I'll double check that. I think there are two. Sal Capaccio with us. Sal, do you happen to know? Are there buys next week?
No, there's no buys on Thanksgiving. Nobody's off on Thanksgiving week.
Okay, so none next week, but then I think it is six in week 14, which is pretty late. How do you think week 12 does in a bye draft?
You're right, six.
Six in week 14. Would this be about perfect maybe for most teams, Sal?
Yeah, I think so. I think it really lines up pretty well for most teams. It's later in the year. You get a push, you know, as you get into the, you know, final stretch run of your season. But I would say that it would also depend on the season you're having, right? If you're pretty banged up early in the year, or maybe things aren't going your way, it's not bad sometimes to have a little bit of an earlier bye. I think most coaches would just kind of say right down the middle. If you could just divide the season in half, that'd be great. You get through, you know, 8-9 weeks, have your bye, another, you know, 9-7-8 weeks, whatever it is, 9 weeks, you're good. But I think in this situation with the Bills, it comes at a pretty darn good time.
Yeah, I mean, I think the potential, I mean, I know we didn't get any definitive information on this from McDermott yesterday, either with you guys or when he was on with us afterward, Sal, but the potential for everybody who's been out, even Milano, to come back for the San Francisco game feels like that's in the window. So that includes Coleman and Kincaid and Spencer Brown, maybe most notably, who missed this last game, and Coleman's missed a few. I mean, just... I don't mean to put unrealistic timelines on it. I know we don't really know, sure. But, you know, nobody's on IR, and it's been a few weeks. So, you know, maybe they'll have their full team in, you know, almost December already, which is kind of incredible.
Yeah, and look, so the guys who were not there on Sunday, Spencer Brown at right tackle, tight end Dalton Kincaid, wide receiver Keon Coleman. At least in the case of Brown and Kincaid, we had questions all week if they would even play. So you'd think that they should hopefully be available. You know, now it's going to be a month for Keon Coleman. So you hope he's available, but obviously no certainty there. But it would be, you know, two games missed, three games missed. So that would be trending hopefully okay. And Matt Milano, as you just mentioned, I mean, he's on injured reserve. He's on the designated to return list. They can wait until December 4th, which is after the San Francisco game, to activate him. And, you know, so they don't have to play him. They don't even have to have him on the roster. My sense is, though, it's trending in that direction. And let's not forget, Dewayne Carter has now fulfilled his four-game obligation on injured reserve. So he's on IR, and if they want, they could activate him as well.
Yeah, I saw some people looking through the snap counts from Sunday and sort of surmising, like, Jordan Phillips out-snapped Quentin Jefferson by a lot in the game, and, like, maybe he's the odd man out when Dewayne Carter is ready to come back.
Yeah, maybe. They're going to have some decisions to make. And, you know, maybe not. Who knows? Maybe Dewayne Carter doesn't come back this week. A lot of times they'll have a guy kind of ramp up at practice, see how he goes, see how he does. You know, so we'll see where it goes. I think that the Bills like having numbers at defensive tackle. But at the same time, they still have Ilyanku and Branson Dean and the practice squad as well. So you're probably a little fat there. I'm pretty interested in what happens at linebacker. You know, you do have Bill Inspector on IR, so you could do it. You can bring Matt Milano, you know, back on and, mm-hmm. you know, have the same numbers you had. But let's look at what you have at Mike and what you have at Will. Like, does this mean anything for Nicholas Morrow? Eddie Ulofosio, you're not going to waive him. He's a drafted rookie. You'd love to, you know, you're going to keep him on the roster even though he doesn't play. And Joe Andreessen's your backup middle linebacker, you know, so I don't think it affects his, you know, Matt's a Will linebacker. So
right.
I'm a little interested what happens there as well.
So, Sal, back to Sunday. I mean, I don't know if you can rank it just for the whole game, the hype around it, the Allen touchdown to win it, basically clinch the win. I don't know if you want to rank it somewhere among the, like, the recent years here, the top moments. I definitely assume that it's up there, right?
For sure. As I tweeted out yesterday, you know, I mean, obviously you guys know I love my job, what I do. I love being on the field for the games. It's just It's in my DNA to be down there, part of the energy, the crowd, what's going on the sidelines. I just love it. As opposed to, you know, a sterile press box, right? A lot of times where you can't really hear anything, and that's not the case in every place, but it's just so much more, you're insulated with everything. I love being down there, but it's always great, but there are just times where it's just really special. Mm-hmm. And that run was one of those times. It was just a special, special moment to be down on the field in that moment with the crowd crescendoing the way it was. And the way it works for me is I have one earpiece in. I keep an earpiece in my right ear to hear Chris and Eric and Greg Harvey, our producer, to talk back and forth with him. I do not put two headphones in. I always leave my left ear open, A, because I want to hear what's going on in the field between anything, players, coaches, officials. But B, I love hearing the crowd. I need to know what it's like in the atmosphere. And I will tell you, though, guys, it gets a little tough to hear sometimes in that one ear because it gets so loud in that stadium and others. And that was one of those times where, like, I don't even know what Chris's call was until I went back and heard it, to be quite honest with you. It was a special moment. There are a few of those over my career that I've been down on the field for. I would say certainly Taron Johnson's pick six is one of them. But it was in COVID. There were, like, 10,000 people there. It wasn't the loud environment. Right. It was super loud for 10,000.
You probably heard the call.
Just being there. yeah, that's right. But just being there. And I've often described, like, that's truly one of the times in my life where something moved like almost in slow motion, where people think that, like him running down the field, me seeing people in the stands jumping up and down. I can still picture it in slow motion in my head. There's been a few of those over the years where things like that have happened. Nyheim Hines' touchdown, the kickoff, was, for its own separate reasons, incredibly, incredibly special to be a part of.
Yeah. Couple more things on this. I'm reluctant to ask you because I feel like you would have already mentioned it if you had anything really unique about your perspective on that play. Like, where were you watching the play, the Allen touchdown?
So my general, it's I'm glad you asked. I don't really, you know, I could, you know, talk a little bit more about this with people that they could understand how it works for me. And every sideline reporter, I'm sure, is a little bit different. The way it works for me is when the team starts, whichever team it is, in their own side of the field, let's say up to about the 30 to 35 yard line. I stand there. I stand where that going away from me as they're coming out, basically, and I'm on the sidelines. We cannot, as sideline reporters, we are not allowed to stand, obviously, between the 30s. You know, that's where the yellow stripes are, and you can't do that. 25 might be, but, you know, you squeeze in there. Once the ball crosses, I'd say, the 35-yard line generally, I scoot my butt down to the other way so plays are coming at me. Mm-hmm. And then and I'm generally around the 25, 20, maybe 15-yard line until they get closer to the red zone and in the red zone. Then I try to straddle the goal line in case there's a play that I have to say, hey, this is what I saw. I don't remember if I was right on the goal line, but I was near it. I was right there. I was somewhere in the vicinity of the 5-yard line to the goal line when Josh ran that ball. So it was coming like right level to me when he got into the end zone. And as he's running, like, you know, Dawson Knox said, as soon as he got the first down or took off, he knew he was going to score. I kind of thought that too, just looking at the guys coming at him, but I thought maybe I actually thought he was going to go down, like take a slide, because he had slid a few other times. And then once he got close enough and you saw he's not going down, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I've said it this way, and I don't know if this is maybe not the best way to say it, but it felt like three different acts that play, right? Like you're all standing, everyone's standing like fourth and two, you know who's on the other side. Maybe it would have felt even more anxiety riddled if the Bills were trailing or tied in the game, but you know, they've got the lead, but they're eschewing the field goal, they're going to go for it, so you're tense, get the first down. And he gets the first down, and for me watching on TV, like, oh, there's a lot. He's just going to keep going. Oh, he's just going to score. Like, those were three separate things. Get the first down. Oh, he's got a lot of yardage. Oh, this is going to be a touchdown. And it all happened so fast, and there are three, you know, not dissimilar thoughts, really, but it's just the objective kept changing. And I think as a fan, that's so exhilarating because you're so pent up, like nervous for this play. Like, come on, I want this play. You're probably not yelling if you know what you're doing because you want to be quiet because your team's the one with the ball. And it just starts happening, and it just, the stuff just goes flying out of your mouth because your brain is just racing.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that play, too, is you said it's like in three acts, and that's happening. And the way it unfolded, if you go back and watch a lot of the, like Dan Orlovsky has done a lot of this over the last couple of days, there's a lot of people, including others, not just Dan, who will tell you that the Chiefs had the perfect defense after that play. Like they did a great job. Like they actually won the rep. As Dan Orlovsky said, they won the rep.
They crossed the Bills up.
They did.
Right? They broke a tendency. Yep. Yeah, right.
The Bills expected man-to-man. They were normally man-to-man. They switched up to zone, and Josh Allen had to – that's the play where Josh Allen has to put the cape on, right? Which is – we always say, like, okay, well, Josh Allen puts the cape on. I always tell people, like, yeah, sure, he makes special plays once in a while, but he doesn't – they're not winning just because he's always putting a cape on. Like, they're making plays around the board. Well, that's a play where that had to happen because the Chiefs did it. They stymied the Bills X's and O's wise and what they wanted to do and forced the Bills not to do. And the Bills were not looking to run the ball there with Josh Allen. But because of the way it unfolded and everybody stayed on their blocks, Josh Allen saw what he saw. You know, he took off. And one of them would be Ryan Vandermark keeping his guy wide. Don't underestimate that. Ryan Vandermark keeping his guy wide was a really big deal on that play. Like, Josh gets that running lane. You know, that's just a backup right tackle who understands, like, I better keep my guy wide so my quarterback can have – but what happened, the byproduct is he gave him a running lane, you know, to be able to run through there.
Yeah,
so,
well,
that was something that happened.
That and Jones. Like, Torrance did a great job on Jones, but Jones helped him out. Jones went inside, and Torrance just was able to sort of use his own leverage against him, right? Just, you're going that way, I'm going to just – that created the hole. If Jones has a disciplined rush there – I wonder what happens. Allen might spin out and go to his left or something. Like, who knows? Because Jones would take up a lot of his field of vision. Like, the field does not look as open there if he's not. He ends up pushed past the center. I mean, he's way out of it.
Did you hear Marcus Spears on this last night?
No.
He actually said, Marcus Spears said, and he goes, look, and I hate saying this because the guy's great and he wrecks game plans. He said that he thought Chris Jones played a selfish game. He said Jones wasn't in concert with the rest of his line trying to do his own thing, and that's why those things happen. And that's a credit to the Bills, too, and for frustrating him, maybe, and saying, hey, I got to make a play here. I got to do this. And he goes, a lot of times, like, if that's going to happen, you got to let those guys know, I'm doing this. I'm going off script. I'm doing something else. Get on my back. Cover me. It's like he's just doing his own thing, and guys didn't, you know, you don't have the full team doing your 111th, right, to use a McDermott term there, because he said he played basically a selfish game like that, and it hurt him to say that because he's such a great player.
Yeah.
And then I just want to point out the other thing is the interception by Terrell Bernard at the end of the game. If you go watch some of the field level video, I know that Jenna Cottrell was one that I watched from Rochester. The same kind of thing with the crowd. It was really different. It was interesting. As he's rolling out and then he throws it, you hear like the crowd goes silent. There's a lull. There's the ball's in the air and the crowd is silent, and then suddenly Bernard picks it off, and you just have this euphoria. And right there, that was right in front of me, too. I was standing right at the edge of the sideline where the sideline and the media is allowed to stand, and that's where the play happened, essentially. And just to be a part and see the scene of the players and coaches going crazy after that was incredible.
So 9-1 versus 9-2, Bills off this week. Then it's San Francisco. The Chiefs have Carolina this week. They're an 11-point favorite. It's Carolina. They'll probably win and get the one-game lead back in the race. But a lot of golf left here, Sal. How do you sort of handicap this? I don't know if you want to go game by game or not, but just generally at least with the Bills staying in contention, to say the least, for the one by winning.
Well, listen, I think it's the same thing we've said all week, and now it comes to fruition, which is at least you force the Chiefs to have to play ball here. And it's the NFL. Anything can happen. I mean, yeah, I don't expect them to go to Carolina and lose. Of course not. I know the Carolina Panthers have been playing better. But after that, they have a division game against the Raiders who play them tough. They play the Chargers, who are really suffocating on defense at times. They still have the Texans. They still have the Steelers. They have the Broncos at the end of the year who could be playing, by the way, for their own playoff spot, right? I mean, it's not a given that they're going to just roll everybody. The talk all week about, and this has happened after the game, obviously, you know, people in Kansas City are Chiefs fans, and while the game really wasn't that important, it only matters in January. This is why it was important. It was important to the Bills. If it wasn't important to Kansas City, why did Patrick Mahomes play every snap, right? It was important to them. Of course it was. They were trying to win the game. So I think that at least the Bills gave themselves a shot here. I think the issue is, for me, to do it, the Bills also have to keep pace. And that's going to be tough given their schedule, especially with Detroit looming. I think they can come back and beat San Francisco, especially the way they look, but the things we talked about with the injuries. I think they can go to L.A. and win. I'm not super impressed with the Rams. They can be really good at times. That Detroit game is a bear. And by the way, Detroit will have 10 days. They play Thanksgiving and the next Thursday before playing the Bills 10 days later. So, you know, that's going to be a tough one. But you keep the pressure on. And at least you put yourself in a position where if the Chiefs do stumble, and injuries happen, you never know.
Mm-hmm.
And it could, important players could get hurt. It's happened to the Bills many times. We know that. So at least that can happen. And even if it doesn't, you stay with the 2 seed, which if you have to play 2 and 3, it is the difference between a home game and an away game. And who wouldn't rather play the Ravens here than versus there? Or the Steelers here versus there? Or the Texans coming out of Texas to come here instead of going back down there?
All of that, and the Chiefs are bad. Actually, offensively. So not only can you not predict these things, it's any given Sunday, but they're also kind of bad.
Do you think they're bad? Is that what you're
kind of
the word?
I don't think they're
not good.
I don't think they're bad.
They're not really good anyway. Yeah. They're kind of bad. That's why I'm settling on kind of bad.
Mike, they just like, I know I'm with you. I look at the metrics. I look at the numbers. But man, they just grind you and they find ways and they make plays and they're so smart. And I, it's tough for me because I thought the same way all week. Like, man, they're just not that good, right? They're not that offense. It's not that good. But when you're watching them, and I know that the Bills did a really nice job on them, but they just make it so high stressful for you all the time.
Yeah.
And you the margin for error is so thin against
it was
them.
Absolutely tracking toward a 2024 Chiefs win.
Yes.
The fourth into all of it. I mean, the Bills needed that play from Allen. They don't get it. Jones stays in his rush lane or whatever, like say, and he just throws incomplete to someone who's covered because they were crossed up by all that. Mahomes gets the ball, like that's the game they've been winning all year. You know?
Yep.
So as that game was unfolding in the fourth quarter, I mean, it was gripping, but I was really worried. I feel like this is the Chiefs. This is what they do. This is what they've been doing all year long to the tune of 9-0. So you know, credit to the Bills for stopping it and making that play.
Not only was I worried about that Bulldog, I was worried that it was literally going to be the what people said last week when they had the practice squad kicker, that dude's going to hit a walk-off to win it, right? Because it was lining up for that.
I guess we're all kind of saying mostly the same thing. Yes to all the points about finding ways and making plays and field goal dreams.
I just
whatever.
Don't want my name anywhere near the Chiefs are bad.
They just can't move the ball.
That's all. I just don't want it. I don't want anything to do with that.
Where are the points? The same last year. I mean, they were this last year too. Look at their scores. I mean, or don't, right? Because they won the Super Bowl. Maybe just don't. It's the bye week. Maybe just don't do any of these things.
Sal, how much of an alert level will you have during the bye week and some time off here on Micah Hyde? I feel like if that is going to happen, it feels like the bye week is when that would happen. I don't know. I could be wrong. It could happen at any time. Obviously, if an injury happens, then maybe that would increase the urgency. But I don't know. Are you on any kind of a Hyde watch?
No, and I'm going to ask you, is there anything that's prompted this question other than just the general question?
Just because I know I'm not going to talk to you for another week.
Okay. No. I am nowhere closer than I had been all year on that.
Okay.
Which is, to me, they're probably 2 injuries away from something like that happening. I think they feel very comfortable and confident in what they're getting at safety. Now, I would say 2 injuries away or maybe one really, like a Taylor Rapp. If Taylor Rapp had to go to the locker room and had his foot examined, if he comes out and all of a sudden he's done for, a month, which didn't happen, obviously he's fine, then I start to think about something like that. I'm just not right now. I haven't been all year other than saying, mm-hmm. hey, if it's going to happen, I would expect it maybe in November, December, and, you got to have 2 to tango here. This is not a situation to me where one side says, hey, we really want you to play, and it's automatic. Or he says, hey, I want to come back, and it's automatic. I think you have a few things at play. Would it stun me if it happened? No, but I'm not going to be on alert for that to necessarily happen, especially also because, guys, where do you fit these people coming back on the roster as we talked about? You'd still have to make room as well. Like, that's a player that hadn't played then in a year, and you already have Milano, and you have Dwayne Carter at some point. DeJuan Smoot's going to come back at some point, most likely. I know things shake out, and I think right now they only have 52, by the way, not 53. So I just think that there's a lot at play that you have to get to that first.
Sal, thank you. Have a good break.
Thanks, guys. You too.
That's our Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
I mean, Patrick Mahomes simply might want to consider having more passing yards this year than Aaron Rodgers does. That would be mm-hmm. a good step toward not being called out as bad All right, Rodgers has played one more game, but that's a good... Aaron Rodgers?
That's stark.
Aaron Rodgers is outpassing you?
Yeah, that's tough.
Come on. Rodgers, he also doesn't lead the league in picks like Mahomes does. How many turnovers do the Bills have? Fumbles, too, this year. Mahomes has 11 interceptions. Two Sunday.
Five interceptions, and is it maybe six or seven fumbles? I think 12, five, 12 is the number I've got in my head here, I'm not sure it's exactly right.
Get it together, Pat.
No.
Just the regular season. 803-0550. Are they bad? Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. We would love to talk some more about Sunday's win, and we'll get into more aspects of it, more of the consequences of it as we go through the day. Paul Hamilton will join us at 6 to talk Sabres, who are out west this week. This is WGR.